Hi again, listeners, and welcome to our latest podcast. I'm Andy Hanasek, Editor-in-Chief of the National Provisioner and Provisioner Online, and today I'm talking with Dr. Heather Leidy, Assistant Professor in the Department of Nutrition and Exercise Physiology at the University of Missouri. And Heather is going to be talking to me today about a study that was released on presented on November 14th at the Obesity Society's annual scientific meeting in Atlanta, and it's a study all about protein-rich breakfast and how it helps to curb appetite throughout the morning. Dr. Leidy co-authored, collaborated on the study, and she's here to share some of the insights and some of her thoughts with you and with me. And Heather, thanks so much for joining me today.
Oh, no, great to be here.
So the first question I have for you, Heather, is there have been studies in the past, and neither here nor there whether which what's better or worse, but there have been studies in the past around protein and breakfast and satiety and things like that. What stands out about this particular study in comparison to previous ones, which, you know, have all kind of talked about the importance of protein at breakfast, but this one's a little different. Can you tell our listeners why that is?
Sure. Over the past 5 or 6 years, we've become pretty interested to see what protein does at breakfast. You know, a lot of the past protein-related studies have been about protein in the diet over the course of the entire day, and so now we're really starting to see some unique differences with protein at breakfast. And so, you know, it's one of those things I think that scientists at least seek out to do as far as the effects of something, and this happened to be protein. And when most of these protein meals were given in the past, they were fairly high quantities. Generally, you know, 40 or 50 grams of protein, which is, you know, quite a bit of protein for somebody to consume on a daily basis in the morning. And so some research in our lab recently has actually shown that eating a protein-rich breakfast that contained modest amounts of about 30 or 35 grams of protein have significant benefits on satiety and subsequent food intake. This study actually is a follow-up to some of those studies. In the fact that, you know, a lot of the work that I've done in the past have been research-based meals. And so in order to make those, you know, there's certain things that have to be prepared in our lab to test this hypothesis. And so this is really one of the first studies that have come out using commercially prepared foods to see whether these types of foods that are rich in dietary protein of a modest amount, again, in this study was comparing 30 grams or 39 grams to lower protein foods, has the same benefits on appetite, satiety, and subsequent food intake.
And so some of the results you found were that even at that lower level compared to previous studies, there was a definite effect on satiety amongst the people who took the test and went through the program, correct?
Right. And so in this study, it was a more practical comparison study. As I said, you know, these were commercially prepared foods. The higher protein versions were a variation of egg and sausage-based meals, a lot of breakfast bowls, and that was actually compared to a lower protein pancake-based breakfast, which is the types of foods that most Americans consume. And then there was also a no breakfast comparison as well. And so when, you know, the volunteers came in on separate days and had one of these four eating patterns, perceived appetite and satiety or feelings of fullness were assessed over a four-hour period, and then at the end, an ad libitum lunch was given. And so what we found is that both of the high-protein breakfast meals that contained 30 grams or 39 grams led to a significant reduction in perceived hunger and a significant increase in feelings of fullness or satiety compared to the pancake breakfast, which was lower in protein. When you take that a step further as far as looking at subsequent energy intake at the lunch meal, both high-protein breakfast meals reduced subsequent intake compared to the low-protein pancake-based breakfast.
So at the end of the day, even at those lower amounts of protein intake compared to previous studies, caloric intake at lunch was lower than the high carb or low protein breakfast, and hunger pangs, if you will, during the morning time were also reduced.
Exactly. And so it's one of the things that we're really trying to look for is there a particular threshold at which, you know, is there a certain amount of protein that you need to get these satiety effects But then is there also an upper limit that, you know, too much or more is really not going to be beneficial? And that's kind of what this study has is alluding to, is the fact that this, you know, the 30-gram protein quantity is really what was needed to elicit very similar satiety to what we saw in previous studies.
So one of the things I thought of, Heather, while you were talking was you mentioned that this was kind of a follow-up to some previous studies you did. What other questions do these results pose for you now moving forward, maybe with some of the work you're doing at Missouri there?
Well, I think one of the things that I've always not struggled with, but you do, you know, clinical research trials and you know, a lot of my research is also looking in young adults or older adolescents, and you know, a lot of times these protein-rich meals work, but you know, we've tracked them over a course of a 12-week period, and when we give them the meals, they adhere to it, and we see these benefits. And then when the study is done, because the food isn't readily available, we end up seeing that a lot of these individuals return to their normal behaviors. And, you know, it kind of parallels with this, too. There's an increase with breakfast skipping in the United States, and that's closely associated with obesity. And so that's exactly what we see, that a lot of our volunteers, when they're done with the study, return to their breakfast skipping behavior. You know, when we do follow-ups with them, the primary reason is that the food isn't readily available. They see benefits with eating more protein. They eat the foods when it's provided to them. But when it's not readily available, it's a struggle for them to get that much protein at breakfast or eat breakfast at all. And so this study is really, you know, the culmination of what we do with research, in the fact that now we can show that eating these commercially available, healthy, protein-rich breakfast meals that are, you know, easy to purchase, they're easy to prepare and consume, can be beneficial.
Well, and you're in a perfect spot for that on a university campus. I remember way back to my days, I used to love breakfast, and then I went to college, and breakfast vanished.
Yeah, interesting, which is funny because the dining halls all have breakfast meals, but I think it's just getting up and trucking that 15 or 20 minutes to the dining hall to consume the breakfast meals. And so, you know, to me, this was a really interesting study because there was no data out there to support just this, you know, already prepared food. Do you actually see the same effects?
Perfect. So one of the things that I try to tell the industry, tell the readers, tell the listeners, is that good news like this needs to be promoted out to the consumers, out to the consumer media, get things picked up. How do you advise, I guess, meat processors to really get this news? How do you get consumers to buy into something like this, especially, you know, cynical consumers who might say, oh, well, this is a protein study done by, you know, or funded by a protein company, even though the name is not necessarily tied to it.
Right.
How do you get consumers to buy into this and understand that a protein-rich breakfast will help them, based on this study at least?
Sure. So I don't know if there's a couple different ways of approaching that question, so I'll go one way and then I can kind of switch over.
Okay.
I think a lot of times consumers and even a lot of my colleagues don't understand a lot of the ideas behind industry-funded studies. And so just a real quick summary, because I think it has to do with how we what we do with the data and the findings and so forth. And so in an instance like this, it's the case that a proposal gets generated. So our research question came out to the extent that we know that we're hypothesizing that protein is satiating, and we have data to support that. The next step is, okay, can you do this with commercially available products? And so once the primary investigator poses the research question, Hillshire Brand, in this case, funded the study. And then, you know, the study got completed with those funds. But at the end of the day, the study findings and the take-home message is completely generated solely from the study and through the primary investigators and the collaborators on that study. And so even though the funds come from that, it's not technically driven by the funding source. It's driven by the research in and of itself. And so when you take that in the context of looking at this study along with some of the other ones, you know, there's some pretty clear evidence that eating a protein-rich meal has benefits. Now, you know, when you take a step back, you know, does this study advocate to eat commercially prepared foods every single day? And I think that, you know, the answer is obviously no. I mean, if you talk to a lot of dietitians and, you know, the dietary guidelines, everything is in moderation, and using a lot of different types of varieties with different types of protein sources can be very beneficial and very healthy. And so, you know, it goes back to, you know, how often do you want to consume these? That's kind of led up to the consumer. The study shows that eating breakfast that is higher in protein of 30 grams is beneficial. And so how you get that in could be that, you know, some of them are home-cooked meals that you prepare at home, you know, with a skillet. Some could be eating something like Greek yogurt that is higher in protein that you don't really have to make. You just kind of have to put it in a bowl with some, you know, fruit or granola and whatnot. And then also using these commercially prepared food items could also be supplemented into a healthy breakfast program.
Perfect, Heather. Thanks so much. I appreciate it. One final kind of wild card question I had for you. Any indication, I know it's been a few days, any indication on how the survey or the study and the results were received at the Obesity Society meeting?
Yes, it was well received, and since then we've had a plethora of email follow-ups from different organizations. Some have been, you know, colleagues from different universities as well as, you know, a lot of the lay press, and so pretty good take-home message, and you know, the study was tightly controlled, and but also was very practical in nature. And so, really, the next step now, because this was based off of the study and based off of the presentation at Obesity, we're now in the process of submitting the manuscript for publication. So that's kind of the next step. But it was very well received. We're pretty excited about it.
Well, thanks so much, Heather. I appreciate your time. And is there any way that our listeners can get a hold of you or find the study online or see some takeaways from it beyond, say, the releases that we have?
Sure, definitely. So a couple different ways. First one, my email address is, and I'm not sure if I should spell this or just say it, so it's my last name and my first initial. So it's leidyh@missouri.edu. I'm happy to take emails. I do that quite a bit. I don't respond as quickly to phone messages, so if anybody wants to get a hold of me, email is probably the best. You can also easily do a PubMed search with breakfast and protein, and a lot of our previous studies have come up. This one won't come up per se yet because the manuscript is just currently under review, but the Obesity Journal actually submits a summary of all the abstracts that were presented, and so that's another way of doing it. Or sending an email to me, I can easily send the PDF of the poster or the abstract that was presented at Obesity. That's fine, too.
Perfect, and I'll put your email address in the podcast description so listeners can see it in case the spelling comes across kind of funny over the phone lines and over the recording here. So hopefully they won't overload your inbox, but hopefully you will get some feedback.
Sure, you know, it's fun to interact with folks from different backgrounds and different interests, so I'm happy to field any questions.
Perfect. Thanks so much for your time again, Heather.
Sure. All right. Have a good day.
You too.